Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, March 8th, 2021, and this is episode 215 of The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. And I have my audio on over there. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me from Nevada, southern Nevada, is Eric Nathanson. What's up, Eric? How you doing?
Hey, Chad. Doing well. Another week of Giants, closer to Giants baseball, another week closer to feeling like we're going to talk about it later. Fans in the stands, like, starting to feel like real baseball is around the corner. How are things not by the bay, but in the northern part of California?
Relatively close to the bay. Yeah, no, it's exciting news. We'll talk about that. We may have fans in the stands for the regular season, at least. That'd be great. We do have it in for spring training right now, but it's, I don't know. I mean, it's been great being able to watch some of this baseball, not every inning, but we just love it. You know, just this, you can almost smell the grass through the TV and the radio. And I love this time of year. So it's so much fun. But, you know, we're going to get into it here. The Giants, again, are, you know, not expected to do anything great this year. But at the same time, they're prepping for the future. And, you know, their salary cap and their potential for signing free agents really looks good beyond this year. But in the meantime, you know, they have some young performers that actually aren't doing so bad here in this early spring. And I think it's kind of fun to watch some of these young guys and a mix of veterans as well, and even some reclamation projects that Farhan has signed. And, I would have to say it's not an easy thing to manage and balance, right? You've got these constantly moving parts in and out, this rotating, revolving door. But even from a coaching perspective and scouting perspective, it's taking freaking like 70 guys from camp and trying to determine what your best 40-man and then 26-man roster is. And with this roster, I don't think it's as easy as plug and play like some of these super teams where it's a little bit more concrete.
Yeah, there's no set lineup for the Giants just yet. Yeah. I actually think today's lineup is as close as we're going to get. LaStella was leading off. Yez was second. Posey was batting fourth. So who was third? Donnie Barrels was batting third. Longo was fifth. Crawford sixth. And then Wade seventh. Vossler eighth. And I don't remember who the ninth hitter was. But that's as close to a starting lineup as you're going to get at this point.
Yeah.
And you know, especially if Belt doesn't get healthy, because if Belt's out and Vossler continues, if Belt's out and Vossler continues to perform the way he's doing, then they're definitely going to have him up there in that lineup right there. So I think the fact that guys like Vossler, who's not as young, but Ramos is getting a chance, he's getting at bats. Luciano's gotten at bats. Bart's getting at bats. I'm just looking at the list of guys who are getting at bats, period. Wade's getting at that. So at least, like you said, they're giving the young guys a look here. That's why spring training for the Giants is totally necessary. And they kind of wish they had seven more games to play this year. I'm sure of it, because with 74 guys in camp, I mean, it's really tough to make. Jalen Davis was batting ninth. That's who it was. Because with 74 guys in camp, I mean, it's hard to find at bats for everybody, especially with shortened games.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Your screen may have switched to show Johnny Cueto up there. I just wanted to start off the broadcast. Let me go ahead and play this. I got a notification. Johnny Cueto went live, and I was thinking, oh, he's probably, you know, this is right near first pitch. So I thought, oh, it's going to be behind the scenes in the dugout or something like that, which I guess they can't bring their phones out on the field and all that. But this is what we got. Johnny Cueto just having fun in the hot tub. I don't know. Just playing with filters, of course. Putting clouds up and rainbows.
Is there supposed to be sound with this?
If Sam's not coming through, that's okay. He's speaking Spanish right now. But
Is he
anyway,
floating
just
in
one of
the
those funny
clouds? I
things.
mean, maybe Johnny Cueto has been partaking in somebody's stash. I mean, what else do you do on your off day? I don't think baseball tests anymore for weed, so.
Yeah, it must be his off day. So anyway, I thought that was fun. While the game is starting, here I am watching him take a hot tub bath. Grown
Johnny
man doing that.
Cueto.
So
Johnny Hot
what are
Tub.
you gonna do? Johnny Hot Tub. That's right. Now he's pretty entertaining on the social medias and what he does there. All right, so the Giants are playing right now, but overall the spring, not that anyone cares. They are 2-3-2. Again, shortened games, split squad, whatever you want to call it. They're just kind of floating right there. But we've had some exciting performances so far. I mean, early on, Jason Vossler, I mean, what is he, 8 for 16 so far? He's got a couple of doubles, and he's looking pretty good from that left side. Ramos, of course, with his two bombs yesterday, and in fact, I'll go ahead and show that because those were some mighty.
Yeah, oh man, the one to left field, the way he got up on that high breaking pitch, I think that was the one off Doolittle.
Yeah.
That was an impressive swing. And then to see him go the opposite way too. I mean, it was both kinds of swings you want to see out of a hitter.
Here they
Elliot
are.
Ramos swing, and it's a high drive, deep left center. Way back there goes Winker at the wall. Adios, pelota.
Yeah,
Into
that
the
was his first
Cincinnati
bump. And he
bullpen for
looks good in
landing
a
the free
Giants
agent
uniform. He
marker.
fills it out real nice, doesn't
Elliot
he?
Ramos got it, and I thought that
Yeah,
was maybe some kind of a breaking ball, a
look at
high
that.
hanger. He's trying to
How he
steal a
gets his hands
strike.
up under it, he pulls his
You
hands in
learn something
enough
about
so he can get
Ramos.
the
He's like,
barrel to the
hey,
ball.
I don't
Exactly.
beautiful
He threw
piece of
those
hitting.
elbows
I
and the
don't just spit
wrists
on
right
curve balls if
inside.
it's the first pitch.
That was a
And
problem I always had, It was the
for the
high and
Giants
slightly inside
prospect,
pitch.
Elliot
I just
Ramos
couldn't
with
get
his
my
first
hands
home
around
run
in
of the
time.
spring.
And it
Oh,
would
that
just be
was.
way up on the barrel,
That's a favorite
It
of
was
mine.
bad.
I had quick hands. I got to the inside stuff really easily.
Oh, that's good. So, and then his second one, I believe, was Oppo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
So,
was a strongman home run too.
it's definitely a strong man, even for spring training, strong man home run. So that's been fantastic to see. Let's see what else. We got Joey Bart. He's 5 for 8 overall. And we got homers overall by Ramos, who's got a couple. Lamonte Wade Jr., Darren Ruff, Stephen Duggar, Joe McCarthy. Donnie Barrels hit one. So they had a little bit of a power outage those first couple of games, but they're kind of waking up here recently.
Yeah, they hit five in the game yesterday.
Yeah.
Ramos with his two. Duggar went yard. I think, yeah, Lamont Wade went yard yesterday. And then, was that Wilmer Flores maybe yesterday? I don't know. But it's been a power surge. 9 runs, 14 hits, 5 homers. That was their best day so far. And I think that's the kind of offense that we can expect to see. I mean, we saw last year the Giants were averaging more runs than they had since, I believe it was like at least 2016. And this year I would expect more out of the lineup that does that. I mean, this Vossler guy, he's the guy that I'm so curious about. When they signed him back
Yeah.
in November, it was with the intention of trying to get him major league at bats. And well, I'd never heard of him before. He was drafted by the Cubs back in 2016. 2016? Yeah, 2014, he was drafted by the Cubs. And he's been in spring training 3 years with the Cubs, 2 years with the Padres before this year, and never broke camp and has never played in the big leagues whatsoever. And this year, he's doing what he did last year with San Diego. But I don't know if those stats, that's the exact page I'm on. I don't know if his stats last year for the San Diego spring training, if it's spring training or summer camp. I can't seem to find somewhere to differentiate that. But either way, he was showing some of the same stats last year in San Diego, which is why I see why Farhan wanted to go get a guy like this. Farhan's got to be sitting there like Monty Burns when he's got his fingers going back and forth next to each other, like, yes. You know, watching guys like Vossler
Excellent.
and,
Yeah.
yeah, watching Vossler and Wade tear it up during this. I mean, these are the guys that he went out and got. Vossler is so versatile. Somebody said it in the Giants group today. He's like their Kiki. He's like their Kiki Hernandez.
Yeah. Now, it'll be interesting. I mean, he's got 102 major league at-bats from 2016, like you said, with the Cubs and then the Padres. He's never had more, though, than 27 ABs in a season. So, I mean, he's definitely.
This is all spring training. None of this is regular season.
Oh, correct. You're right, isn't it? This is spring training.
Yeah, you go to his major league, same page you go to is you go to his regular season stats, and it says he has no stats available. The guy's never been in the big leagues, which is kind of surprising. He's got a great approach. He takes the ball the other way. He seems to be able to drive to the gaps as well. You know, this could be one of Farhan's great little finds. This is what Farhan does. This is the kind of team he's putting together. It's guys that are versatile, that can play multiple positions. You know, it's the rage of baseball nowadays. And it started with the Dodgers, and it should, because the Dodgers have won, what, eight straight division titles, and they just won the World Series. So,
Yeah.
yeah, honestly, we should want the Giants to be a little like the Dodgers. And I have no problem with Farhan building a club like that. It looks
Yeah, no
good
kidding.
when things like this are working. It looks really good, but you gotta hope things like this are still working in June and August.
Yeah, I'm looking back at some of his I know I'm not sharing it right now. I should go ahead and switch over there. Showing some of his minor league and college stats here. Let's see if I can get that up. Share screen. There we go.
Yeah, on the baseball
All
card, but
right. Yeah, so for the PCL last year for the Padres, what, 116 games? He hit 291, 20 bombs. Not bad. 102 strikeouts in 375 at bats. It's a little high, but he does come with a little bit of pop, so that's good. So yeah, overall, AAA, he's got a 280 batting average in 179 games. AA is 241, and Single A is 252. So yeah, you're probably looking like a guy in the majors that might hit 260 to 270, something like that. You know, maybe could poke 10 to 15 a year. So, I mean, he does seem like he has the tools. I've been watching his at bats, and he definitely passes the eye test for me. But I'm not a major league scout. But you know, through all the guys that we've seen for 30 years, he definitely looks like he's not overmatched up at the plate, which is a good sign. And maybe,
We
yeah,
are
it's just
not, yeah.
one of these signings, Farhan, and his scouting potential and their number crunchers and their inside baseball guys, they said, yeah, he's one of these guys that can turn into, someone who's going to produce at the major league level. That's cool.
We're an eye test kind of podcast. We always have been. We don't, we don't dispute advanced statistics, but like
Now
when you
just like
see
sniff
when
it. Let's just sniff his armpit a little bit. Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Oh man. I mean, we've seen like we can see that Duggar, like when he doesn't have it, or when, I'm just trying to think of an example here. Joe McCarthy hasn't had it. I know he homered, but I mean the guy's hitting well, and every time I
Yeah.
watch one of his at bats, he looks lost at the plate.
Yeah.
He's a guy that's gonna get He looks like he's gonna get edged out. That's what's fun is you can kind of see these battles shaping up now. Like Darren Ruff doesn't have any options, and so for the Giants to justify keeping him, he's got to hit a little one. So he's hitting 250 with a bomb and a double, and that's what you want out of a guy like that. And Vosloo's gotten a look, so you know that they're looking at corner outfielders, corner infielders as their main position battle candidates. Because you're constantly seeing at the shortstop and second base position guys who are pretty much going to be with the team, except for, Kurzan, who's just kind of getting cleaning up at bats at the end of games for everybody.
Yeah. She's like, get in there, buddy.
Yeah, that's totally that guy's role too. Kurzan's that guy, and I would say Alcantara is that guy. And even Joey Bart to an extent is Will Wilson has been that guy too. He hasn't started as much. Hunter Bishop has come in and cleaned up games. It's guys like that have to come in. That I mean, you got 74 guys. You got to get them at bats.
So what do you think so far about Sam Long?
I like what you wrote. You're looking nasty because that's from what I've seen and then everything I've read on the other outing that I did not see. He has absolutely looked nasty. He's somebody apparently that could be stretched out and used as a starter. So I have no idea if you want to start him with the major league club because he seems overpowering, or if you want to send him to the minors and stretch him out. I don't know.
Yeah, no, for, I mean, they have such an abundance of lefties on this spring training roster right now. It's really incredible. And you look at the balance of power in the NL West, obviously, just like most of baseball, the NL West is fairly dominated by, you know, right-handed pitchers, probably by at least a 2-to-1 margin. And so, you know, the Giants having a lot of not only left-handed bats, but left-handed relievers, you know, could cause some interesting matchup issues for other teams. And maybe that's one of the things that Farhan and company is trying to stretch for, given their, you know, their lack of star power, you know?
Well, they I read an article, I think it was Grant on The Athletic, and it's the guys who have options that are going to be moved back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And there's a lot of guys that do have options. And as Grant had to be reminded, and I'll remind listeners, viewers, that when you have an option, it doesn't mean every time a guy gets sent down, you use an option up. He has an option for that year. So if you utilize an option on a guy, then that option is used for that year. And you can bring him up and send him down. Now, there might be a certain amount of days that he has to wait in the minors before he can come back to the majors. I'm not sure about that part of it. I don't remember that part of it. But option only works one per year. So when they say a guy has three options remaining, that means three separate years the Giants can move that particular player back and forth to the minors at their whim.
Yeah. Yeah, and they definitely have that roster flexibility. There's no doubt about that, which is great to see. And part of it is protecting the ones that don't have any options left. Kind of like, okay, well, these guys, if they have a major league contract and they don't have any options, they're going to be on the team. Or even ones with minor league contracts that don't have any options, they can make that decision whether they're going to jettison them, keep them in the minors before they call them up so they don't have to send them back down and lose them. Or whatever it may be. So
I mean even a guy like Maranta could end up in the minors to start if he's not healthy in time to start the season, and that's just he has the option remaining, and the Giants could choose to, and he could lose a job because of options. He was slated, he could be in the back end of the rotation. He's just a guy who could be caught in the option shuffle, but because he still has one remaining, if he gets sent down, he can totally get lost and never come back up again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're talking about these lefty relievers, and we'll talk about them in a second, but obviously we got Jake McGee, who's clearly going to be in there, most likely, you know, Garcia as well. But in the mix are Peralta and Selman and Bargar and these guys. But they just signed Jose Alvarez to a one-year deal worth $1.15 million, and you know, he had a nasty injury. was it last year or 2019 that he got one off the family jewels? He had a testicular contusion.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it was August 20th. Yeah, there it is. It was 105 mile an hour comebacker to his nuts.
Oh. I had that happen to a buddy.
Everybody cover your groin now.
That's the worst. Yeah, I had it happen to a buddy in Pony League. It exploded his cup. He lost the testicle. It was the worst.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Okay, I'm just
going to
exit the frame.
Wow. I salute Jose Alvarez. I have a whole new respect for the guy now. I'm rooting for him more than anybody. Woo.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's like, you know, broadcasters are allowed to make the joke like, you know, he only has one ball left.
Oh my God.
You can go a lot of ways with that one during a broadcast as the color commentator.
Wow. I mean, I've heard of it happening to catchers, but it's just crazy when it happens to a pitcher. But I mean, you're totally exposed. So what are you going to do? I'm rooting for Jose Alvarez to be the best damn reliever the Giants have ever had.
Talk about your life flashing in front of you. Oh, man. But yeah, he was. Okay, so Jordan Humphreys was designated for assignment to make room on the 40-man roster for Alvarez, and the Padres did snatch him up. It is the second time that the Giants have lost Humphreys. They reacquired him from via a waiver claim from Cleveland. Originally, they had waived him. Cleveland picked him up, and then they waived him, and the Giants picked him back up. But they waived him, and now the Padres picked him up. But Alvarez is only 31 years old. He has a 3.59 ERA over eight major league seasons with the Tigers, Angels, and Phillies. And of course, when he pitched for the Phillies in 2019, he was under Gabe Kapler. So Kapler is familiar with him. Last year, he posted a 1.42 ERA over eight appearances. So again, I know it's small sample size, but he had a good year last year. But of course, the season ended early from that injury. So, but you know, he's had some good seasons, Eric, and I think that this is a really good pickup, and it's 1.15 million. I mean, it's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, there's got to be somewhere like Farhan's got a binder that says you can spend this much money for this, because he's throwing these contracts, these $1.5 million contracts, just at like literally randomly. Everybody feels like,
I know.
I really, really feel like if I went to Scottsdale and I just kept walking by the stadium, I might get hit with a $1 million contract.
I was gonna say he's like Oprah, and it's a bunch of relievers in the audience. You get a million. You get a million. You get a million.
I mean, that's kind of it seems kind of ridiculous, but it's, you know, why not? You know, you're throwing everything. And I said it last week, I think he's ahead of the curve with this. I think he knows that pitching is going to be at a premium this year because they're coming off of a shortened season where pitchers didn't get fully stretched. And then
yes,
half of the pitchers didn't even pitch last year because they were in the minor leagues. And those are the guys that are going to fill out your roster in the, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12th part of your pitching staff. So yep. I think that Farhan's just trying to be ahead of the curve again and just add to the stockpile. It's just
No, this is exactly what they're doing, especially because you look at their projected starting rotation, and you're not going to have these guys going eight innings. It just is not going to happen. You know, we're going to have a lot of, you know, barring them not getting knocked out in the second inning, we're going to have a lot of 4, 5, 6 inning starts, maybe even some openers. You know, we don't know what's going to happen there. But the point is, last year, like you said, was a 60 game season, but they're back to 162, and these pitchers may not be back in full, you know, I guess glory in terms of their stamina is concerned. So having that backload of talent in the minor leagues that have those options is exactly what the Giants are going to need, not only for injuries, but if people just are running on fumes, right? They have one of those stretches where they have, you know, 9 games in 10 days or something like that, or if they have a couple doubleheaders because of COVID, you know, protocol or whatever, they could have just pitchers pitching on fumes, and that's when you have a mysterious injury. Someone goes on the is it back to a 7-day IL this year, or is it 10-day? I can't even remember. I get it all mixed up.
I think it's 10-day now. I think 7 days.
Yeah, is it 10-day? Yeah. So we go back to the 10-day DL and call one or two of these guys up that have these options, and you know that's what they're going for. They're definitely trying to build the roster around pitching depth, and I think it's a smart move, especially this year. They got to do what they can to not overextend these not just the starters but the relievers as well.
Yeah, and it's rounding out. I mean, 74 guys in camp. That's just still the number that blows me away. I mean,
I think you're right. I think any of us could go down there in a Giants uniform and sneak into the locker room and no one would notice.
Right. Oh, yeah, you didn't see me before? Yeah, you got to sign me.
Yeah, I got one of those $1 million contracts. I heard they were passing them out.
I'm a lefty. I swear I'm a lefty.
I just comb my hair with my right. Yeah, exactly. Oh, right, man.
We're talking about fans. You know, any fan mm-hmm. can walk down there. And we've talked about the ball club. How the news that they're going to allow fans at Oracle Park, that California somehow is going to allow certain counties to have certain gatherings of 25%, and the Giants will fall into that, and they can have at least 8,000 fans for opening yeah. day when they finally come home after their first road trip. I mean, I didn't think we were going to see it this quickly. Did you?
No, I didn't. Especially, you know, I live here in the South Bay area, right? So I'm just one or two counties below San Francisco, and I'm in Santa Clara County. And yeah, I'm surprised. I did think at some point Oracle and the Coliseum would open up, but I thought maybe June-ish, you know, something like that, when vaccination rates were, you know, getting high and the pandemic was starting to curtail off. So I'm surprised, but we have this weird colored tier system in California that I don't want to bore everyone about, but basically, aside from full lockdown, which we had in like December, right, and into January, which was like off the charts, like the whole country was, we have this color tier system of four colors, and they all have varying degrees of how widespread the coronavirus is, and then that relates to how open businesses can be. Like purple tier is the highest. That's where like no theaters and movie theaters, no concert venues, no parks at all, right? No indoor gyms, that kind of thing. Well, we just went down to the red tier. So now it's like gyms are 10% with masks, movie theaters 25% with masks. And again, that doesn't actually apply to outdoor ballparks. But I guess Newsom and his crew are just forecasting, essentially, that by April 1st, we should be in, I guess it's the yellow tier, the last tier, where you can start opening up larger public venues like parks and stuff like that. Not indoor. Like, I don't think the NBA, so maybe it's orange tier, but you can't do the Oracle Center or whatever where the Warriors play. But it's an outdoor park. And like we were talking about during the last podcast about spring training, and you and I being familiar with Oracle Park, and as with most baseball stadiums anyway, it's open air. You know, if you have 25% capacity and you're all restricted to your little pods of two and four, in seats, and you're nowhere within 6 feet of someone and wearing a mask, except when you're eating and drinking, which is half the time. But point being, I would absolutely feel safe. I mean, you know, I covered five games last year during the pandemic. And, you know, they did a really good job in the press box where we all were well more than 6 feet apart from each other. I mean, I was like, where is everyone? You know, I'd see a reporter way down the hallway or something. Never at any time did I feel like, and I've been taking this whole thing real seriously, I'm kind of tight about all this stuff, did I feel like I was in any danger? And I think that they're going to do what they can and what is safe with 25%. I think that's completely reasonable by April 1st, especially with the numbers heading where they are. And I'm excited. I'm really excited that fans are actually going to be able to see, you know, opening day. Again, it's not going to be 40,000 sellout crowd. But hey, 8,000 is 8,000. That's basically like an old candlestick game, by the way. So we're going to have a candlestick crowd, you know? So I'm fine with
August
that.
August and candlestick every day of the week, except, you know, I wonder if they'll keep the cutouts. And what I do like, and Kruko talked about it, even if you're playing in front of like 500, it feels like 50,000 after not playing in front of fans at all. And it's cool to see that we're actually heading in a good direction with this. You know, enough of this doom and gloom talk every time we bring up the virus and every time we have to talk about COVID-19. You know, that's the one thing we've been lucky with the Giants. The Giants never had any positives, and that's something they're very proud of. And they've introduced this fan safe thing where they've got all these protocols in place to make sure that the fans who are coming to the games feel, you know, safe and do so. And, you know, as we talked about, there hasn't been a tracing going back to one of these stadium events that has caused some big outbreak. Like, you know, you're a scientist, I'm a facts-based guy. If we had heard those facts, you know, the absence of those facts is just as loud as those facts. And since there's been no outbreak anywhere from any big stadium, like the only outbreaks we heard of were large indoor gatherings that were more like political rallies than sporting events. And so even though we made fun during the college football season that some of these stadiums had like so many people in them and, oh my God, what are they doing? You know, it doesn't appear that there's been any big outbreaks. So I think it's good to see that states. And I feel like if California is going in that direction, that's a good sign for the rest of the country. I hate to be California-centric, but we are a California-based podcast around a California-based baseball team. And it's true. If California is heading in that direction, I think the rest of the country, that means, is kind of heading in the right direction as far as getting things back on track. I believe there will be a concession stand open. They're just
we have a comment from Sergio Dubon here saying no concession stands open at all. What I can read right now, it says teams and event organizers can only sell tickets regionally in the purple tier. We're already out of that, so that's not an issue. In other tiers, teams and organizations can sell tickets to anyone living in California. No concessions will be allowed in the purple tier. Again, we're out of that right now. We should stay out of the purple tier. While in others, concession sales will only be available at seats. So I need to look up the details for San Francisco County specifically, because it looks like it varies by county. But I did read somewhere that it said in-seat concessions will be available. Reading that with this paragraph, maybe they were also saying in-seat sessions will be available because aisleway concession stands are not going to be open. So I think it is possible, without holding up the podcast here, so I guess go ahead and try and look it up yourself, but I know concessions will be available at minimum at your seat. So they'll have someone walking around and be able to take your order. Either someone carrying a tray of beer or someone has one of those little pads that can, you know, get your orders in. I mean, when you think about it, they have that Lexus luxury box service, right? So if you're sitting in the lower box seats, you have access to these waiters, these servers, and they give you menus and you just order off the menu. They punch it into their little tablet, and in 5-10 minutes, they come back with your food for anything you want, basically, from mostly around the ballpark, or at least what's on their menu. So that was probably limited to a good 5,000 to 8,000 people in those lower box seats and luxury seats. So if you think about the whole park being around 8,000 people, I don't see why you couldn't have an army of servers kind of going around and fulfilling that role. Because what it does is it reduces the contact points, right? The touch points around the stadium. And clearly restrooms are going to be open. And I don't think they're going to restrict people from walking around the park to get views and pictures and stuff. But I think forming lines at concession stands is something that they're trying to avoid. But again, I'm not 100% positive about that. But you definitely can get your food and drink if you're going to a Giants game, for sure.
Yeah, they wouldn't allow it to happen if they weren't going to be able to profit off of it. It's kind of the way it is.
Oh, we should take some wild guesses here. Brooks got a question here. What will happen when a home run ball lands in the middle of 8 pods?
It becomes a COVID fight. Everybody starts coughing on each other.
It becomes a small spreading event. Yeah, don't touch the ball. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be hot potato with it. Well, no, that's funny.
I'll never forget last year. So.
Well, we've always seen it in spring training games, right? Like the lawns with the circles on them. You already see people leaving their circles to go get the home run balls. So
yeah.
I'm sure that's all that's going to happen. It's minimal contact, right? You got to be in someone's face and someone's grill for like 10 minutes, kind of breathing their airspace. So a couple seconds probably ain't going to be a problem.
Some dumbass outfielder for the Cubs last year, I'll never forget watching him kiss a baseball and then toss it up into the rooftops to some fan. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Why are you kissing the baseball? And then, you know, asymptomatic, you can spread it. What are you doing?
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm more worried about a little spitball action, right? A little COVID spitball.
COVID.
That's funny. There'll be a lot of jokes written about this. Okay, so anyway, yeah, we're talking about depth. That's fantastic. The Giants are definitely building that depth. Hey, if they can't get the talent, they're going to have the depth. They're going to, you know, have the multifaceted Swiss Army knife to try and attack this problem with a lack of talent, with a surplus of depth. All right, so that's good. So I do wonder, though, back to the fans thing, they're going to start at 20% capacity. What I haven't heard is, as the summer progresses, if things are getting better and better. I mean, the Biden administration right now is saying that the numbers and the capacity and the infrastructure, with the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine being bolstered by Merck, their rival, also helping to produce it, they actually can and should meet every single adult who wants the vaccine, that is, to get it by the end of May. And to me, that seems, wow. I mean, that's like incredible. But I didn't believe it at first, but they've had a couple of experts that I trust on a couple of radio shows I listen to. And they're, you know, obviously it takes people wanting to want it, which they're not having any shortage of right now, because you're still, you know, having maybe 10% of the country vaccinated so far. But the infrastructure, the deployment, Johnson & Johnson doesn't require the same refrigeration and freezing. It's a single-dose vaccine, not a two-dose vaccine. They're going to produce 100 million by the end of June. So the numbers all play out there that we should get every adult who wants it to have a vaccine by the end of May. If we can get, you know, 60 to 70% of the adult population with a vaccine by like June or July, that's when you're approaching herd immunity. And I do wonder by then if that's when California, some of these other states are not just at 50%, but I don't think 100% is going to happen this year. I don't either. I think that's just dumb. I think they got to wait till we know everyone is like, you can't be in shoulder to shoulder for 3 hours at a ballpark. You just can't, I can't even see that this summer because you're going to still have a lot of people that aren't vaccinated.
Concerts are the thing that are getting absolutely killed here. And it's like, does 75% capacity, is that good enough for concerts? Like some have figured out how to do the pod thing, but there are people that play stadiums. You're not going to separate 15,000 people in an enclosed stadium and still feel safe about it until everybody is vaccinated, or at least numbers are really, really high. I didn't know that about May. That's good to hear.
Yeah, no, it's really good to hear because
I want to be able to get it, you know?
Yeah, because I think you and I are, you know, like a lot of Americans, we're kind of last on the list. We're not over 50 yet. I'm close. We don't have a medical issue. We're not a frontline worker or a teacher or anything like that. So, you know, I'm like, go ahead, everyone, take it. I don't need it right now. I mean, I want it, but let everyone who needs it get it. So I was thinking I'm going to get it in July or August, but now they're saying it's possible, you know, for us by the end of May, which would be fantastic. So good news for all around. All right, so before we wrap up here, you posed another question. I love these top fives you come up with. We covered the top five moments at Oracle, our top five moments top five seasons in Giants history in our lifetime. And now you've posed the question, what are your top five pitchers, Giants pitchers of your lifetime? So I thought this was a good one because I haven't thought about this in a long time. It's a little bit harder to think from the pitcher's angle, right? Because I'm always like Will Clark and these kind of guys, but from the pitcher's angle it's a little bit tougher. So you want to go ahead and give me your list first, I guess?
Yeah, that works. I went with pitchers this week because it's been the topic with how many they sign, because literally every day we turn around they sign a pitcher. So I figured we'd go with pitchers this week. So my top five, in no particular order but kind of in a particular order, I would have to say Timmy obviously is the Giants. I think he's on your list too.
Sergio and Dubon and Mike Dowling agree. Timmy big time, and then Lincecum. Yep, for sure.
I mean, Timmy is one of the top five of my lifetime, your lifetime, anybody's lifetime in the Giants organization. He's the greatest pitcher that we've seen. Two-time Cy Young Award, two-time no-hitter, three-time World Series champ. I mean, he was 108-83. With the Giants, he made 261 starts, had 269 appearances. Originally a first-round draft pick in 2006, he was the 10th overall pick. And he shined in the playoffs as well. He really did. He was 5-2 with a 2.40 ERA in the playoffs. And that was six starts and seven relief appearances. And if Tim Lincecum is not on your top five list of any Giants pitcher anywhere, then you're just friggin' blind and have missed the last. I mean, there's debatable guys. Like, I have a guy on my list you don't have. You do have. But you have a guy on your list I don't have. And I also chose, from the same era, I also put Bum on my list. And Bum is understandable. Again, he was the 10th overall draft pick a year later in 2007. Bumgarner is a four-time All-Star. He was 119-92 with the Giants, a 3.13 ERA, even better than Timmy at his height. You ready? Are you on Timmy's? I can go back to Timmy. Whose page are you on?
Yeah, I'm on Bumgarner. Madison. I'll go back to Timmy. I got Timmy.
No. Well. You're on Bumgarner then. Then you're totally.
Yeah, but there's Timmy. I got Timmy up.
Then you're totally good if you're on Bumgarner. I'll keep going with Bumgarner. Yeah, with the Giants, he was 119-92, 3.13 in the playoffs, 8-3. With a 2.11 ERA and 14 starts. In the World Series, though, Madison Bumgarner, and this is what endears him to us forever.
Yeah, this is where he becomes the hero, the legend.
I mean, 4-0 with a 0.25 ERA and four starts, five games pitched. That's 36 innings pitched in the World Series. He gave up one run. Do you remember the one run that he gave up in the World Series?
Yeah, it was a home run to their catcher. What's his face?
Holy shit, you do. That's awesome. Sal Perez.
Thank you, Salvy Perez. And it was funny because I remembered that distinct home run because it was his only blemish in his World Series track record. And who did he face?
Yep.
for the last out of the World Series with a runner on third? Salvi Perez. So when he came up, I was like, oh boy, this is ironically the only guy that's gotten him in World Series history. And here he is with the tying run on third. And he's represents the winning run, the World Series winning run. If he jacks his second, the Royals win, you know? So that was definitely on my mind when that happened. So
I feel like that gets lost, that the one guy was the guy he vanquished at the end, you know? I'm with you. At that moment, that was that, oh no, he's the one guy. But Bum worked him so well with those high fastballs.
The high fastballs, just climbing the ladder. Oh, yeah.
So that was a winner-take-all game seven. He has 23 innings pitched in winner-take-all games, two wildcard games and five innings in game seven. So that's 23 innings pitched, zero runs. And one of the best things about him, 19 home runs as a Giant. His most was five in 2015. So I had to throw that in with Bum. So you have any other thoughts on Madison Bumgarner?
Yeah, for me, he's definitely, for those first two that you revealed, absolutely. Madison Bumgarner and Timmy are both on my list. Timmy was just one of those guys where, even though he wasn't around as long as some of the, you know, legendary Giants pitchers, his short duration was just unlike any other pitcher. I mean, like you said, two Cy Youngs, two no hitters. I mean, he just dominated. He did well in the playoffs against Atlanta. He certainly served that role again when he was a reliever in the 2012 playoffs in 2014. And he epitomized the small guy. He epitomized the little guy who was getting it done, you know, the 5'8" 150 pounds soaking wet kind of frame he had. And I had a chance on several occasions to interview him. And I mean, I knew he was a small guy. I'm not a particularly large guy. I'm 5'10", about 200. And, you know, walking up to him, I was like, holy crap. Like, he is tiny, tiny in height, tiny in build, tiny in just everything. And you look at him physically. When I was just 2 feet in front of him, I'm like, there's no way this guy's a major league ball player, let alone a Cy Young Award winner and World Series and playoff hero. But yeah, even though his star burned out a little too soon, sooner than we would have liked to have seen that, because he'd still be pitching to this day if he had any durability. And that's a sad thing about it. I mean, could you imagine if he was as good as he has been or was, but throughout a longer career? I mean, you know, would have been unbelievable. I mean, clearly he would have been a Hall of Famer. He's not going to be because of his short time. But again, Madison Bumgarner, same thing. World Series hero. He's done so much. And again, you know, it's funny how he never won, and never will, I don't think, at this point, win a Cy Young, right? He never had one of those seasons where he had like a crazy ERA and the strikeout king. He was just consistently above average to very, very good every regular season, and then just absolutely shined. He was Sandy Koufax of the playoffs. He was Cy Young of the playoffs, you know? And even MLB and other national organizations finally recognized that fact when they always threw him into, who would you like to start Game 7 of the World Series, right? Because they always throw out your, you know, Kershaw's and what have you, but they always threw Bum in. They always threw Bum in because they recognized the fact that when it came to a big game, he was no unlike any other. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he never finished higher than fourth in Cy Young voting, and that was twice in 2014 and 2016. And apparently, he got some MVP votes in 2016. I mean, that's nice and all. Bum is just that rare guy, and I think that this is what is going to endear him with us forever, and then we'll move on, is the fact that he wasn't the lights-out pitcher in the regular season, but he was in the postseason. The fact that he could step it up at the right time. There's something to be said for turning it on when the lights are brightest, and he just had that gene, and he will always have that gene. There are just certain guys that have a John Wayne-type gene. And Bumgarner has it. And that's why I think that he's just absolutely, you know, going to go down as an all-time great for the Giants. And Bum, he might build a Hall of Fame resume if he can pitch the back half of his career. But I think 2021 is going to have a lot to say about that. Because if he looks anything like he did last year, it's over for him. So hopefully Bum gets his stuff together.
All right, so we each got, what, three more pitchers to go? And I know we have some honorable mentions too, because sometimes it's just kind of hard to say. So I'll take a stab at the next one. And again, sometimes this list is hard because it's top five. It's rounding out that bubble, right? That like, well, it could be number five, could be number six for me, but it's just from the gut. So I'm going to throw out another name out there, and that's Rod Beck. Again, someone who was short in life, but loud when he was there. And he was very similar to a Brian Wilson in the sense that he always got into trouble, but always seemed to get out of it. And he was the dude you went bowling with and drank a bunch of beers with. But that's actually what he was. I mean, especially later in his career when he was with the Cubs, he literally had an RV in the parking lot. And he literally invited fans to come in and drink beer in his RV. I mean, he epitomized what he looked like because that's the life he lived. He loved just, you know, shooting the shit and drinking beer and hanging out with people. And he was a really nice guy. Unfortunately, you know, he did have substance abuse issues and other problems in life, which led to his early death, which was really, really hard to kind of see his life unfold like that. But while he was a San Francisco Giant, man, he was so much fun. And I remember, you know, one of those outings where he loaded the bases with nobody out and he got out of that jam back in, what was that? Was that 93? I can't even remember the year it was. But, you know, Rod Beck, another guy that just, you know, Shooter, right? That was his nickname, Shooter. Because he didn't care what you thought. He just shot the ball and see what you did with it. So I know, I think you have him on your list too, right?
Yeah, I got some Rod
Or
Beck
you have him
facts.
On your list too, yeah.
Yeah, I do. Rod Beck is also on my list. He was with the Giants from 91 to 97. He was originally drafted by Oakland in 1986 and traded to the Giants in 1988. And with the Giants, Rod Beck had 199 saves, second most in club history behind Rob Nen. And I think Nen's at like 206, so he barely passed Shooter. He was a three-time All-Star with 25 or more saves, six straight years, and five of those years were his last 5 years in San Francisco before he went to the Cubs and was a turncoat. But that's fine. It's Rod Beck. We'll forgive him for that.
Yeah.
I mean, he played for some great franchises. He went from the Giants to the Cubs to the Red Sox and then took a year off to get his stuff together and came back to play for the Padres for a couple of years. And I don't think there's anybody out there that didn't love seeing Shooter with his arms swinging.
Yep.
You know, with his mustache and his hair staring in at the catcher, you know, he was entertaining as hell. And I think that's obviously why he's on both our lists. We didn't talk about this ahead of time. And the fact that he's on both our lists is a testament to Rod Beck.
Yeah, no, he definitely lives and endures. His last year was age 35 with the Padres, and that was the year 2004. And sadly, he passed away just 3 years later at the age of 38 in 2007 in June. Oh, man. Unfortunately, he lived a little too hard, Eric. He played baseball hard, but he also lived a little too hard, too.
Some of us are prone to do
sad
that.
Things. Yeah. Yeah. but what a guy. Okay, and then another one on my list, which I don't think he made your list, but it's only because I had that personal I had a personal connection to him, but it's Matt Cain. You know, followed him from when he was drafted or appeared for the team as far back as 2005. And, you know, he was one of those guys who was originally on the roster with Barry Bonds when you get all the way through the World Series era. He had that connection to that legacy kind of, you know, the 90s team into the 2000s. And then, you know, he was nicknamed the horse because most of his early part of the career, he had 200 innings. He went 6, 7, 8 every time. He was just a really durable, likable, consistent guy. And I know he didn't throw up the best numbers overall for his career, but that's not the qualifier for our top five, right? Our top five could be for whatever, any reason we want. And that's in, you know, he's not in the top five performers. No, I understand that, but he's on the top five for me because of the quality of his starts, the, you know, The consistency of his starts, and unfortunately, at the end of the career, his career, and into that massive contract that he signed, he had all those arm issues, which reared their ugly heads and through no fault of his own. But I also, he was a really nice interview, a really nice family man, and I was able to connect with him, and I actually was able to take him to the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and I gave him a tour of the Monterey Bay Aquarium behind the scenes for about 3 hours. With him, his wife, his daughter, and his mother-in-law, and that was something I'll never forget. And he was just super gracious, super inquisitive about the exhibits. And I did a dive show for them as well. And I gave him some photos. He signed some stuff. And then every time I saw him in the ballpark after that, or when I followed him at the AT&T Pro-Am, when I was able to cover that for TortureCast, he always called me, "Hey, aquarium guy," So it was just cool to have that relationship because he really was a genuinely nice guy. It was not a shtick, but at the same time, he was a Southern red ass as well. So when he was pissed, he was pissed, and he took the game seriously. So again, it was kind of like Timmy in a way. He had a little longer career, of course, than Timmy, but it's just one of those guys that I liked so much. It really was personally frustrating, kind of hurt to see him not be able to perform at the level that he wanted to perform at.
Yeah, he was the end was not the end you wanted to see for a guy like the horse. You wanted to see him be
No.
able to go out and, keep his team in a 2-1 ball game through the eighth inning. I love Matt Cain, and he was just outside my top five.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I've got Timmy, I've got Bum. I mean, how many more can I get from the 3 and 5? I got to spread my wings a little bit. So that's kind of why Kane got edged out by my other two guys on my list. But
Well,
I love Matt Kane.
he threw over 2,000 innings for the Giants. It was the only team he played for, right? His first year was 2005. His last year was 2017. So he pitched 13 years for the Giants. The sad thing is that he was under 500, and we know why, right? That was the whole phrasing, the coined phrase, he got caned. Because we routinely talked about this on this podcast when we first started back in 2011, but just overall as Giants fans, it's like, oh yeah. Whoever got caned again, meaning, he'd pitch 7 innings, give up one run, and take the L because the Giants couldn't score a goddamn run, right? His career ERA, okay, so his last 3 years, his ERA was above 5. But his overall career ERA was a 3.68. Very good. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? So someone in the major leagues with a 3.68 ERA really should be at least 500, if not better, but he was 14 games under 500 at 104 and 118, mostly because of those Kane starts, which kind of flipped the script on him. But again, high quality guy, 3-time All-Star, 2009, 2011, 2012. Obviously, the perfect game and many other accolades. So cool dude, man. It was just really
Yeah,
sad to see him because he was 32. I mean, he's only 35, 36 right now. So again, there are pitchers out there that are, 38, 39, still throwing. If everything went well, he could still be pitching in the major leagues if he was healthy. But, that ship sailed. But, he got a nice big fat contract at the end, so he's taken care of for life.
should have got on that Tom Brady diet. His third start. His third start ever in 2005 was a complete game shutout, a complete not shutout, complete game two hitter against the Cubs, and I think that's why I fell in love with him right away and thought this guy's the next coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it was a Cubs broadcast. It's 05. I'm living back in Chicago and on MLB TV at the time, but I guarantee you, I watched that Kane, complete game, and thought he was the next coming. So I totally get, having Kane up on the list. I'm gonna run through my last two. I have an honorable. All right, I threw him on here on the list as an honorable mention, Mike Kruko. He was with the Giants from '83 to '89, which is during my lifetime, so I consider this okay, even though he started playing in 1976 with the Cubs. Kruko was an all-star in 1986 and third in Cy Young. That was his one great, fantastic year. But he had a winning record. He was 66 and 56 with a 3.84 ERA with the Giants. And originally, Kruko was drafted by the Cubs in 1973 in the eighth round of the MLB draft. And because Kruko has brought us so many great memories as the one half of Kruk and Kipe, I kind of wanted to give him an honorable mention here and put him in my top five. More for his accolades and his years of grab some pine meat and things like that that he brings to the game. The squat.
Yeah.
You know, there are just certain Krukoisms that we've all come to love. So I had to throw him on the list. You got anything about Kruko?
Yeah, so he was just one of those guys where, you know, again, my fandom for the Giants started like seriously. I mean, I was like 8 or 9 when I was following him easily, but when I started to get serious was probably the 1983 season. You know, I was like 9 or 10 years old and playing Little League, and obviously I still like the Giants, but you know, 7 year olds aren't getting into the stats and everything was in box scores and newspapers anyway. So that was the way I grew up, was listening to the game, an occasional TV game, but it was always the box scores the next day, right? It was always pulling up the standings in the sports section in the backs, you know, page, looking up the box scores, looking up at the NL leaders to see where, you know, Will Clark was and all that stuff like that. So, but Mike Kruko was just one of those gregarious pitchers, you know, back when he started with the Giants in 83. So he kind of was one of those first guys. And then of course, Clark came in 84 for his rookie year. That's really what solidified my fandom of that team. And Mike Kruko was just a hoot in interviews and a really solid guy. Obviously in 86, when he was an all-star, he won 20 games, 3.05 ERA. So that really, you know, kind of projected him to a further stardom, even though he was 34 that year, right? I mean, he was getting up there in age.
It's kind of a late bloomer when you look at some of the stats.
Yeah, I mean, he pitched, 7 years for the Giants, but he also pitched 7 years prior to that, 6 with the Cubs and 1 with the Phillies. So he had 1,100 innings with the Giants, 2,100 innings overall. So almost half his, a little bit more than half of his career was with the Giants, but it was all at the back end. And it was his best, right? He was 3.84 ERA with the Giants, which was great, and a 3.9 ERA overall. No, he pitched all the way through 89. That was their World Series year. I remember he was injured that year, so he wasn't able to. I don't believe he pitched in the playoffs that year, and then he had to wrap it up. But yeah, very in a lot of ways, very similar to Matt Cain's kind of career in terms of numbers. But yeah, obviously one hell of a guy. I've chatted with him a few times as well, and he really is a genuine personality and one heck of a talent and a funny dude and a broadcaster. So that's a good pick.
Yeah, I just to round it out. And then here's one. A lot of Giants fans remember this guy. He was my dad and I. He was like that pitcher that we fell in love with before Timmy. Noel Lowry was that guy. He was supposed to be that guy. And
oh man, he was like that next guy with the birthmark on his eye and the whole thing, right? Like he was that dude. The
he
hat pulled real
huge
low.
Contract, yes. Everything.
Yeah.
It was that kind. It was exactly right there, just like that. Right before the 06 season, he signed a 4-year deal for like $10 million or something, which was the largest contract for a pitcher with only one full season of big league service. It's like everybody was all in on him. Lowry only pitched for basically 4.5 years, 03 to 07. He went 40 and 31 with a 4.03 ERA. And my favorite stat, he struck out 420 batters. He was once the NL Pitcher of the Month in 2005. And he was a 2-time NL Pitcher of the Week, once in 04 and once in 2006. And much like the other guys on this list, Matt Cain, Bumgarner, Timmy, Noel Lowry was a first-round draft pick in 2001, but he was the 30th overall pick, but still, he was a first-round draft pick. And I thought he was a second coming. And as a fan from afar, needing that pitching to step up, like, it was one thing having Jason Schmidt dominate for a little bit, but he came from another place. Noah was, you know, the homegrown talent. He was Timmy before Timmy, it felt like. But Timmy being a rock star to a whole new level.
Yeah. No, we thought Noah Lowry was gonna be the next guy. He was the next star pitcher, and he was good. He was good when he was pitching, but you know, he was often injured, and obviously his career was cut short because of those injuries. And Yeah, that's a good call because he was really good for a while, and I think the last I heard a couple of years ago he was like running a brewery or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah,
But I'll
I
have to
heard
look
something
it
like
up.
that too. I somebody mentioned that recently to me. I don't remember what it is.
Yeah. That's another good call, man. He was good back in the
He's
day.
the co-owner of Santa Rosa Ski and Sports. Well, that business is closed, according to Wikipedia.
Oh. Okay, so maybe it was that. I knew he was a business owner of some sort, so I guess maybe that
I had to go to
business
the
doesn't
Wikipedia.
exist
No,
anymore. Of course, there's a lot of businesses that don't exist now because of COVID,
not
but
anymore. We lost one. So, should we throw out some honorable mentions? I mentioned Jason Schmidt, Rob Nen, who is the Giants' all-time saves leader. I absolutely loved watching Rob Nen. The little toe tap, that was just one of the most fun things the Giants pitcher had. Ryan Vogelsong, I mean, who doesn't love Vogie and his story of, getting shipped off and then coming back years later?
Yep.
I mean, do you have any particular Vogelsong memories that stick out? Because he was kind of
Well,
one of
I
those
mean,
guys.
just the playoffs. I mean, again, he was very Bumgarner-esque in the way he was able to turn it on when it counted, right? I mean, he was pretty much an average pitcher during the regular season. Nothing, quote, special. I mean, good, a good pitcher, but nothing out of the ordinary. And obviously, he's fought through coming back from, Japan and injury several times with the Giants and the Pirates. But again, one of these guys that doesn't have all the tools, but he has the mindset for it. He just is no fear. And that's the way he was in the regular season. I think he kind of had to put it on cruise control because he had limited tools. But then when you get into the postseason, he could say, I'm only out here for 6 innings, so I'm going to give it all I had. And he just had some legendary games,
Yeah, he did.
especially against Cincinnati and St. Louis in 2012. He was just, he pitched in a couple of those elimination games where you're looking at it going, I don't know about this one, but it was rally enchilada time, and he just was able to pull it out. And just, he was just so fun. He's definitely fits the definition of a gamer. He was a
Yeah.
true gamer. So he was great. And obviously, he was notorious for this. Now you're never supposed to talk or interview the pitcher who's going tomorrow. You don't do that. It's a weird unwritten rule. Some pitchers don't mind it, to be honest. They're like, whatever, I don't care if I'm throwing tomorrow, it doesn't matter. But that was just kind of an unwritten rule from the media, is that, oh, Bumgarner's pitching tomorrow? Oh, well, you can't talk to him today. So that was just kind of it. Vogie, I'd seen him get mad when someone was like, even just asking him a question, and the next day was his start. So he took that shit seriously. He was like, if you're gonna talk to me, I'm gonna give it back to you. So I saw that more than once in the clubhouse. And so he became very notorious for don't go around Vogie within 24 hours of a start.
Some guys got to get into that mentality. And the other honorable mention I have on this
Exactly.
list is the opposite of that mentality. Sergio Romo, El Mechón. I mean, I'm going to root for
Oh.
him in Oakland
Totally.
next this year. Like, I love Sergio. That is not necessarily a performance pick as much as I just enjoy the hell out of Sergio Romo.
Oops, sorry, I was muted there. Sorry, my dog was going off. Yeah, Sergio Romo is another guy, very relaxed and in there, and he got pumped all the time and all that, but he was a chill dude, man. You'd almost think like, is it 420 somewhere? Like, hey
Yeah,
man, what's going
wouldn't
on? But
shock me.
he was a great interview too. I mean, you just sit down with him and he'd answer anything and he'd smile and he'd ask you about your life and how your life is going. I mean, he was a real cool dude. Again, small in stature, 160 pounds sopping wet. You're like, how are you a major league pitcher? I don't understand.
Yeah.
But there are some of these guys like Lincecum and Romo and others that just they have the special mechanics and the mindset to be able to do it. And here Romo is, he's getting up there in age and he's still hanging on in the major leagues. It's really awesome to see. And I agree. I think, Oakland has a really solid bullpen this year, and I think he's going to be a big part of it, and he's going to be used wisely in situations where the slider is the call. So it's going to be see to good to see him, hopefully flourish in Oakland this year.
And you had a last addition to the honorable mention list.
Yeah, actually, it was my number five. I didn't quite get to him. I don't really have too many on. I don't have a list of honorable mentions, but I was letting you take that. But it's John Burkett. For some of you younger chaps, you may not remember him because, you know, Mike Kruko pitched before him, but you all know who Kruko is. But John Burkett, I mean, he was the guy that we thought was going to be a Cy Young Award winner, the way he was, you know, would dominate certain starts. He didn't overall have the absolute best numbers in the world. He had a really long career. He pitched 15 years in the major leagues. He had a career 4.3 ERA. With the Giants, it was a 3.83. That's great. That's where Matt Cain was for a longer set of time. You know, 1,000 innings basically with the Giants. But he had one hell of a run. You know, he pitched from, well, he had a cup of tea in 1987. I don't really count that because he didn't pitch in 88 or 89. He was in the minors. But from 1990 through 94. So it's only those five solid years. But during those 5 years, he was really, really good. He was an all-star in 1993 and a 22-game winner that year. That was the year that the Giants won 103 games and didn't make the playoffs. And we talked about that last week during our last episode. So he was one of those stars of that team. And he was an excellent bowler, too. He had many, many 300 games to his resume. So that was all before Mookie Betts kind of took that, you know, bowling baton of a major league player.
Today I learned John Burkett bowls. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Really good bowler, too. Like I said, many 300 games. But Mookie Betts has that to his resume as well. So anyway, one of those guys where when the Giants were getting good in the early 90s, he was an integral part of that. Was only a one-time All-Star with the Giants. He later was an All-Star at age 36 with the Braves, believe it or not, in 2001. But a long career and a really solid one with the Giants. So maybe someone that wouldn't end up on most people's top five. But again, this is all about personal experience. And with my fandom kind of really hitting its stride in the early 90s, he was just one of those guys that was old Mr. Reliable. You know, it was like Timmy Day when we talked about Timmy Day, where it was like, there's a good chance of a win today because it's Timmy Day. Same with Burkett. It was like, Burkett's going out there. We're going to win today. I mean, he was 67-42 with the Giants. It's pretty damn good. That's a 62% 20, winning percentage.
25 games over 500? Holy crap.
In a small assort? Yeah, a small sample size. So, yeah. No, he was really solid with them. He averaged 200 innings a year for those 5 years. So... real good start. So did you have any other honorable mentions?
No, I think that covers it. There's nobody that popped into my head during this discussion either. I figured if somebody did, I'd throw them out there. But
yeah,
nobody really popped into my head during this. It's fun to do these, and I think we'll do them through spring training, and then we'll have to see if we have time during the regular season to fit it into a normal show because we'll have a lot of games to discuss. But we will at least do two or three more of these before the season starts. I think that this is definitely worthy of another look. So,
for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, by the way, everyone, I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but we are streaming this on Facebook Live. If you're on Facebook Live, of course, you know this already. But for those of you listening to just the audio stream, we're going to be doing this more frequently, hopefully every episode now, because it really is a good way to engage with our listeners. We've got a lot of good comments today as we wrap up the show. Mike Dowling says, I'm in the UK, followed the Giants since 98. Never been over to see them, but it's on my wish list. Hopefully get over one season. Hey, we'd love to have you, Mike. Whenever you can make it, you know, look us up. I live in the Bay Area. I'm covering games. I could always meet people, you know, at the ballpark. That would actually be a lot of fun. I've done that several times with listeners and other people, just having a beer, you know, before the game. It's a lot of fun. So, and of course, you know, Eric, hopefully we'll be able to make it up here one of these years after COVID kind of settles down. He's not too far away, but he'll get up here. Check us out on Facebook. We're going to have this recorded. So if you want to see our ugly faces, if you don't, totally acceptable. You can just listen to our gravelly voices and go from there. Go ahead and find us on your normal podcast feed. We're also at torturecast.com. You can follow us collectively on Twitter at torturecast, individually myself at ChadK21, and then Eric at Two Out Hits. That's with the number two. I'm going off the top of my head, Eric. Is there anything else that I missed? No, he's shaking his head. All right. Well, I got to get ready for my wife's birthday, so I got to get out of here and get some gifts or something. I'm kind of pushing the deadline. But anyway, thanks for joining us on Facebook Live, on audio, or wherever you have consumed our podcast today. And we'll see you next week for episode... Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. We're going to be recording, unless things pop up, we're going to be recording regularly on Monday around noon Pacific time. So if you want to join us live, you can do so around that time. So for Eric, this is Chad signing off. We'll see you next week for episode 216. Until then, aboom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.